This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from the all-new 2008 Cadillac CTS. Be an original. Visit Cadillac.gm.ca.
Hello there. So, how's it going? Okay, cool. Oh, geez, that silence is pretty uncomfortable, isn't it? But if you flick on your TV or go to the movies these days, you'd think that we love that kind of awkwardness. From The Office to Superbad, we seem to enjoy watching people in those situations that make us squirm. So this week we ask the question, why? I'm Sukhyun Lee. This is the best of Definitely Not the Opera. Coming up, we hear from BJ Novak of The Office and PEI-born Martha McIsaac, one of the stars of Superbad. But first, over to a Canuck master of mining the uncomfortable for comedy, Ken Finkelman. Before the awkwardness that is known as The Office, there was the groundbreaking 1996 comedy series, The Newsroom. It centered around the newsroom of a Toronto TV station and featured an utterly flawed cast of characters. I'm going to play you a clip from an episode I was in, where I played the part of an unimpressed parking lot supervisor having a conflict with news director George Finley, who wants to know what the heck happened to his parking space.
I finally got through to parking for you.
Yes, sir. I thought you were parking there.
No, I'm a building services coordinating secretary, but I had the movie out of the leaky spot.
Great. No, I appreciate this. You know, it's this is not a racial or anything, but you know, I've worked with Japanese people before, and you want to get something done.
I'm Chinese.
Anyway, it's great. You're a genius. I appreciate it. And where did they put me?
Nowhere yet.
Nowhere?
They're reviewing your application before they assign a new spot.
Wait a second. How can you sit there and be so cool about this? This is a disaster, okay? And you can just sit there and be that cool, right? Is this sort of some kind of Zen thing that you...
I think I have to go.
No, this is. This is some kind of Zen thing.
That is a scene from The Newsroom, where Ken Finkelman played the part of George Finley, the unlikable and self-absorbed news director. In real life, Ken Finkelman also wrote and directed the TV series. He's here to talk to me about the value of awkwardness in storytelling. Hello, Ken.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, so, okay, I was wondering, you know, in your stories, why is it that you mine awkward situations?
Well, for me, it's best in a situation of, for lack of a better word, we will call racial tension. There are two people, person A and person B. I'm Caucasian, you're Asian. Being Caucasian, my character thinks he's in a position of power because he's from the majority and you're the minority. But you have something that he wants. In the show, you had something he wants. You control the parking and he wants a special parking place. So he comes to you. And when he's frustrated by you, when A is frustrated by B, the Caucasian who thinks of himself as liberal can't control his suppressed racism. And something slips out. Well, it kind of slips out. Because he's so sure of his own liberalism, he actually thinks that what he's saying, which is kind of racist, is simply a truism. And he's allowed to say it because he's a liberal. But then he hears himself. And when he hears himself being racist, he splits in half. And half of himself hears it, and half of himself goes into denial that he's heard it. And then that inner tension within that character is what causes the cringe from the audience that thinks of themselves as liberal and has the same feeling in that situation. That's it. I'm ready to leave.
Yeah.
I am. That's all I have to say. It's a mathematical formula.
Well, you know, I remember seeing you, speaking in public, at Idea City. Remember, you were looking at a big auditorium and talking. But the hilarious thing is there was Moses Neimer. Yeah, you came on after me.
Yeah.
Moses was up there and he was being a diplomat, you know, looking at everybody very nicely, you know, giving you a very wonderful introduction. And the first thing you said to him in front of everybody was like, Moses, why are you talking to me like that? You never talk to me so nice in real life.
You remember that?
Yes. My jaw was open, and I could not believe that in front of an entire auditorium of people, you just let her go, and you said a lot of stuff that seemed to just bubble from your unedited subconscious.
Well, not the subconscious.
And to me,
it's
was
not
like,
subconscious. It's just...
I guess it was conscious.
Yeah.
I mean, most people aren't like that. I mean,
no,
what happened to you? Why were you born like that? Able just to say it as it is.
Well, it's all a little bit of salesman. There's a little bit of salesmanship in all of it. You know, I mean, you pick and choose your moments to tell the truth. But where did it come from? It came from being a younger brother. I think it all came from being a younger brother.
A younger brother to Danny Finkelman Finkelman's 45s.
Yeah.
Another guy who lets her rip.
Having to fight for, you know, for my position all the time as a little kid. I don't know. I don't want to get into it right now.
That's too honest.
Yeah.
You've reached your honest limitation.
Yeah.
Ken, over your career, can you tell me about an awkward situation that you were faced with?
None. I've never felt uncomfortable in my professional life. That's what you meant, not my career, my professional life. Oh, there was a situation in which the Gemini Awards, and this was one of the nights it wasn't broadcast, right? I'd been drinking, which is what I always do when I go to those things, and they called my name. So I went up the stage, and they had made a mistake. I was standing there, and then they said, I'm sorry, we made a mistake. It's Chris Haddock, not you. And so Chris Haddock comes up, and I'm standing there. I was ready to say something, right? And then the woman who made the mistake was standing beside me, and she kind of got a little surly because I didn't leave the stage because I thought I would just kind of joke around with Chris Haddock. And then she kind of – and I just turned to her, and I said, well, fuck you. You know, it's not my fault. This is your fault. And it was funny, but I didn't. I guess some people might have cringed, but it wasn't.
I'm cringing
that I
just
did.
Listening to that.
That was...
I mean that is a classic Canadian moments in television.
That was all right.
Thanks, Ken, for coming in. That
all
is
right.
Ken Finkelman. He is a TV and movie writer, director, and actor. Keep listening to D'Antio, the podcast, because in a few minutes, I'll have yet another awkward conversation with BJ Novak, who writes and acts in the TV series The Office. Now, over to the D'Antio hotline for one of your stories of awkwardness.
Hi, this is Dawn from Jerseyville, Ontario. And one time when I lived in Santa Fe, New Mexico, I was walking home, and I saw these little kids standing around at a bus stop. And I could tell that they were doing something funny. Something didn't look right. Well, when I got closer, I saw that they were doing something I used to do when I was a kid. They had their arms tucked in their shirts, and they were goofing around, walking around, looking like they had no arms. Did you ever do that when you were a kid? So I thought, oh, gosh, remember being a kid, doing that? It's kind of a brisk day. Put your arms in your shirt, keep them warm. And then when I got up close to them, I said, hey, you guys got no arms. Except they really didn't have any arms. But don't worry, to hide my embarrassment and try to fix things up, I was very brilliant and said, wow, you guys must be great soccer players. And every time I tell that story, I just want to die all over again. Thanks for your show. I love it. Bye.
Ouch. Dawn, that was an awkward cover-up. But thank you for sharing your story with us. And hey, if you're listening to this podcast and you want to share your story, or if you have any comments on anything you've heard so far, call our listener line too. And guess what? It's not going to cost you a penny, because now we have a brand new toll-free number, and that is, get out your pens, 1-866-630-3686. That is 1-866-630-3686. 630-DNTO. This is the best of Definitely Not the Opera, where this week we're asking the question, why are we so fascinated by things that make us uncomfortable? Well, Martha McIsaac just might have the answer. She's one of the stars of the super awkward and super successful film Superbad, and she joins us from Hollywood. Hello, Martha.
Hello.
Hey, on Superbad, you got to work with Hollywood's holy trinity of awkward, Judd Apatow, Seth Rogen, and Michael Cera. And I was wondering, you know, what did you learn from them about finding the funny in awkward situations?
Well, I think awkward situations are really funny anyway, before I started working with them. And I think they just sort of, that's their thing. And they've found a niche there that I think is new to Hollywood. And people obviously love it. I mean, pretty much every movie they made has been incredibly successful. And there's got to be a reason behind that. And I think their awkwardness is probably it.
What is it about that style that makes people really sit up and take notice and, you know, pay the money to go see the movies in droves?
I think it's probably because it's really, really relatable. I mean, life is awkward. There are awkward situations every day. And when it's happening to somebody else, it's actually pretty funny. When you're in the situation, sometimes you have to step back before you can find the humor in it. But, I mean, with shows like The Office and stuff like that, it's so uncomfortable that you kind of want to look away, but you can't. There's something that just drags you in and forces you to watch it.
And how did you tap into your character's awkwardness?
Well, I mean, just working with Michael and his awkwardness, sort of, you just sort of have to feed off of that. And, I mean, the character was so sort of cute and awkward in her own way and trying to deal with liking a boy in high school and him being so awkward he has no idea. Just doing a scene with Michael, if your character's supposed to be kind of awkward, you feed off his incredible awkwardness and then it somehow meets in the middle.
Well, how awkward was it, you know, shooting your drunk, messy, and extremely unsexy bedroom scene with Michael?
It was incredibly awkward, especially since his mom was there at the beginning. That sort of made it a little worse. I was really nervous having to do that scene, and throughout the entire shoot, everybody was like, oh, I can't wait till we film that scene. It's going to be so funny. I'm coming to set. It's going to be awesome. And I was just like, oh, this is going to be mortifying. I'm so embarrassed to say these things out loud. And then I got there, and it was just fun, and nobody made me feel uncomfortable. They were all like coming over and whispering stupid things for me to say to Michael in the middle of the scene without him knowing and stuff. So, I mean, they made me feel really comfortable in an awkward situation, but I think it turned out really well, and I was really happy with the stuff that they chose. And I think even though she's drunk, she's still incredibly awkward, obviously.
Yeah, that was, that was very cringeworthy, seeing you, you know, vomit in the bed and try to seem so smooth and sexy, but then it wasn't happening.
Right, yeah, the striptease was sort of my favorite part of the awkwardness, like the least sexy striptease ever in movie.
That's great. Well, Martha, tell me about one of, one recent awkward situation that you found yourself in and how you dealt with it.
Well, I went out the other day for just a meeting for a movie, and then later on the director asked me on a date, and I was just like, oh gosh, I've been in Hollywood 2 weeks and already a director's asking me on a date. This is incredibly uncomfortable. But I think I ended up handling it okay and made an awkward situation sort of go away, which was okay, but I think that was sort of the most recent moment where I was like, I don't even know that this happens in real life. This is incredibly weird. But it ended up being okay, and he wasn't a creep. It just was a bad situation.
Hey, you grew up in Charlottetown, PEI.
I did.
And I was wondering, you know, there's Seth and Michael. They're also from Canada. What is up with all of these awkward Canadians taking over Hollywood?
I'm not sure. I think maybe Canadians are hilarious. And now we're just getting our chance to shine.
I think you may be onto something there, Martha. Well, thank you for sharing some of your truly uncomfortable moments with
My
us.
My pleasure.
And you take care of yourself down there, hey?
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
That is Martha McIsaac, an actor who grew up in PEI, who now lives the high life in Hollywood.
Hi, my name is Carolyn. I'm a singer-songwriter, and I have a couple of cringe fest stories. First one, I was in front of a fairly large audience opening for an artist, and I was having trouble keeping my guitar in tune. And I said, I don't know what's going on. I'm just having so much trouble with my G string tonight. I mean, I got way more of a laugh than I intended. And the other one was I did a spoonerism. Spoonerism is when you mix up the first two letters of a word. This was at another show. And I had just been in Regina. And I said, man, I'm so tired. I just flew into Vancouver from. And then I had mixed up the letters. And what I said was embarrassing. That's all. Bye.
Quite the spoonerism, Carolyn. Thanks for sharing. Ahem. The Awkward Stage is a band from Vancouver led by frontman Shane Nelkin. And today Shane and guitarist Ty Runyon join me to talk about discomfort. Hello, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Hey.
Oh, God. I feel so uncomfortable.
right off the hop.
I think I have to go to the bathroom.
Hey, Shane.
Yes, first of all,
you know, what is the awkward stage you're referring to when it comes to the name of your band?
It basically refers to that crushing youth, that period where, you know, when you're like a really little kid, you're not so self-aware. You can go into a room full of people and in your diaper and like sing a song, and you're not that, you know. But something happens at around, I guess, 8 or 9, where you start to become really aware of yourself, and then it just gets basically goes downhill from there. It's that sort of crushing period in your life that I believe really shapes you as an adult, and you never really shake those feelings of horrible shame and ignominy.
So, going back to that idea of, you know, this awkwardness you're talking about, what is it about awkwardness then that influences your music, that helped you on your destiny to become what you are today?
I always sort of use the analogy of, like, you know, businessman whose briefcase spills open in a board meeting and papers, you know, all over the place is instantly sort of jolted back into that gym class where he got pantsed or whatever. You know, it's never far away. It's always right there in the recesses, those horrible times of shame and pain. And you should see me with a lady. That is awkward.
Hey, what song are you guys going to play for us, and what is it about?
Well, keeping with the theme of sort of crushing youth, this is a brand new song. It's not on our record, but it's called We Dreamt of Houses, and it's sort of about a lot of the things that you take for granted growing up, not the least of which being the idea that you would someday own a house, but that's sort of just symbolic of a lot of the other realities that slap you in the face as you get older.
Here they are. This is Shane and Ty of The Awkward Stage in the DNTS studio.
Dreamt of houses, took Madonna whores as spouses, storied halls our portraits hung when we were young. When we were young, youth promised houses, walk-in closets full of blouses, on our shoulders furs were slung. When we were young, when we were young, we wasted chances, could afford ignored advances, stole our honey and got stung. When we were young, our loves, we're butterflies just pressed in books. But lo, of love. lost my ideology. My every gesture now an apology. And as an axe will hit the tree and the bark upon it splinter, so ill prepared were we for the coming of this winter. My dream of roses, it has died. It cost so much to live inside. And now my dreams are in extremes. They're in between the lottery and suicide. Our hearts were full, our hearts were wild and durable. A dream of houses so far flung when we were young. When we were young. When we were young. When we were young.
We Dreamt of Houses by The Awkward Stage. And that song will be on their upcoming album. That was lovely, guys.
Ah, shucks. Thanks.
Hey, you just finished opening up for the New Pornographers North American Tour.
We did, and we stole a bottle of gin from them.
Hee-hee. Hee-hee. Hey, so on tour, I mean, as an audience member, we see bands perform on stage and everything seems awesome, rocktacular. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering, since we're talking about awkwardness, mm-hmm. what was one of the humbling behind the scenes awkward moments you encountered on the recent tour?
Oh, my goodness. It wasn't so much behind the scenes as right on stage. In Boulder, we played in front of Ty's family, including his grandmother. It was a little weird singing, you know, these odes to adult film stars and, you know, praising Easy Girls with Ty's lovely grandmother in the audience. That's a little awkward.
Who we were staying with.
What was even more awkward was she threw her top at me. That was really
awkward.
Yeah,
and she really loved it. I mean, in the end, she was very impressed. So I don't know what that says about my grandma.
Grandma's got a swing.
Awkward.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thank you, Shane, for coming in. And thank you, Ty, for coming in. And take good care of yourselves, hey?
Thanks so much for having us.
Hey, you too.
Hey, that was Shane Nelken and Ty Runyon. They're from the band The Awkward Stage out of Vancouver. You should check out their album. It's called Heaven Is for Easy Girls on Mint Records.
Hi, this is Lorraine Russell. I'm calling from Duncan, BC. My most embarrassing story is several years ago, I was at a convention with a lot of labor people. And I'm sitting around a table pretending I'm dignified and an adult with Michael Harcourt. It was his last day as mayor of Vancouver before he became leader of the official opposition. So we're sitting and having a charming little chat, and I spit my gum out right in his lap. And he was very charming. He didn't say anything he wanted to. He just reached into his pocket, pulled out his handkerchief and removed the gum and continued talking. He didn't even run away. Love your show. Take care.
Pure class. Thanks, Lorraine. Over now to a guy who knows awkward, BJ Novak. Now, he's one of the writers and stars of the NBC comedy series The Office. BJ plays Ryan Howard, the lowly temp who's risen through the ranks to become a power-mad manager this season. We've got BJ on the line to talk to us about how to craft a perfectly awkward moment. Hi, BJ.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Okay, so on The Office, you take the normal office environment and find incredibly awkward moments there. So I'm wondering, what are the key elements for turning any situation into an awkward situation?
Well, a lot of situations are awkward inherently, and any situation has the potential for awkwardness, so I think on our show we don't strive for awkward moments, but if an awkward moment presents itself or is organic, I think the difference between our show and a lot of other shows is that we're happy to show it, and we're happy to get some laughs out of it.
I mean, in regular TV, when there's a long pause, people freak out. They're like, fill it up. Did the execs try to put on the pressure, like, hurry up, guys, gal?
Yeah, and, you know, we actually did hurry it up a little bit. We had to find some balance. You know, one of our first episodes of The Office ended with the stage direction in the script. What follows is the longest awkward pause in television history. I think probably in the end it ended up being about 10 seconds, and we had voiceover under it. So that shows how scared we were even to do that. We didn't even follow up on our own stage direction, you know?
Yeah, I mean, here at the CBC, I think as soon as you have like 7 seconds of silence, this alarm goes on. So people are terrified of that in the biz.
Yeah, I mean, understandably, comedy is about, you know, quickness and brevity and keeping people entertained. We're not trying to be artists by putting in awkward pauses. We're trying to be funny. We're trying to show how funny it is when you say something offensive and no one rescues you and you're just left to die in front of other people or when your boss does, you know.
Hey, why do you think people find that so funny, what you're talking about, that hanging to dry in silence? Why is it funny?
Because everyone's been there. I mean, that's the essence of comedy, is showing something that you've lived before that no one has shown yet. So people can point to the screen and say, I've been there. That's funny to me.
And right, so we identify with it.
Yeah, we identify with it, and it hasn't been shown much before. So I think that's why our show benefits from it.
You know, as the audience and we're watching something, you know, incredibly awkward and it makes us laugh, I mean, the laughter is coming from kind of a strange place. It's kind of out of, there's a bit of terror in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the moment I was talking about that was described as the longest awkward silence in television history, what we ended up doing with that was we put a talking head, we call them, sort of those interview segments from our show, we put the audio from that underneath. And that was Michael, Steve Carell, explaining how great he was at improv comedy and how he'd love to go head-to-head with Robin Williams someday, which had been, you know, supposedly an interview that he had given at a different point. And here he is, you know, with absolutely nothing to say. And underneath you hear him bragging about how he always, you know, can think on his feet so quickly. So we find ways to emphasize, you know, the gap between what people think they are and what people end up being. And I think that's often in the awkward silence too, when you're just grasping.
Hey, as a writer and an actor on The Office, was there ever a moment where you thought, oh gosh, that is just too uncomfortable to do?
Oh, all the time. All the time. I think those are in our deleted scenes a lot. We did more of those at the beginning. If you get the season one DVD, and we were lower rated, to be honest, and a lot of fans love season one, but it was bleaker in the first season. And in our pilot episode, I did a scene where Michael, to impress me, the temp, the new guy, to make me think he's funny, he fake fires Pam over stealing paper clips. And he thinks it's the funniest prank he's ever pulled, and Pam starts crying right in the room about losing her job. And the camera pans over to me, and I'm shaking my head, no, this is terrible. And that ended up being one of the big laugh points of that episode. But as I was filming it, I was in character. I didn't even notice I was shaking my head. It was just so terrible, I wanted to be out of the room.
Hey, what about in your own life? What is one of the most cringeworthy moments that you've encountered of awkwardness?
You know, I've probably blocked them from my memory. You know, just like anyone else, there's probably too many to search for.
You've drawn a blank.
I honestly have drawn a blank. I'm probably blocking it. Do you have one? Maybe I'll tell you how The Office would handle it.
Oh, God.
See, it's hard. They're not at the ready always.
Yeah, let me see. Gosh. Oh, dear.
See, right now, we're on the radio.
Yeah.
We don't have anything to say. We're very embarrassed. This is very awkward.
This is awkward. I mean, we're both trying to find awkward situations, and yet we're both drawing a blank.
And that's embarrassing. There you go.
How would you turn that into the funny?
Well, we would build that up about you're very proud of this interview. You're getting a big American television star.
Right.
I build it up. My father's Canadian. All my family's in London, Ontario. I'm very excited about this interview. We're going to make radio history. And then this is our piece de resistance, and I ask you this, and now the silence. I guess if you build up the expectation, that always makes the awkward silence worse.
Ah, and that's comedy.
Set up and payoff. Well, you know, it's set up and punchline, except we don't have set ups and punchlines. We find this a little corny. So if the payoff is an awkward silence, that would stand to reason that the setup is, you know, the anticipation of something wonderful, something the opposite of an awkward silence. So often, you know, the awkward silence comes at a moment of very high stakes. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, BJ.
Thank you.
That is BJ Novak. He is a writer and actor on The Office. In Canada, The Office airs on Global Thursday nights, and in the United States, you can catch it on NBC. On our topic of awkwardness, the final word goes to a DNTO newbie, Gene Freeman from Regina, Saskatchewan. Gene's a septuagenarian, which makes her our senior contributor. She's been around the block and back and experienced a thing or two about awkwardness. Take it away, Gene.
I really have no idea how young I was the first time somebody said to me, "Oh, you're just going through that awkward stage. You'll outgrow it." I really believed it was only a matter of time before I'd morph from ugly duckling with acne, aggravation, and adolescent angst into Audrey Hepburn, elegant, sophisticated, self-possessed, and most of all, graceful. Well, 60 years later, I'm still waiting. Maybe it's not so much that we can't outgrow it, but more that the awkwardness keeps changing shape as we grow older, especially as a woman grows older. At this stage in my life, awkwardness is often linked to memory constraints. I won't call it memory loss, just a temporary misplacement of nouns, and sometimes verbs. Youngsters in my acquaintance, that's anyone under 55, take great delight in eavesdropping on the conversations of society matrons, listening to things like, "Well, I thought you and what's his name? Oh, you know who I mean. And I thought you were going to..." Oh, no, of course, that was before that... "But didn't he have..." "Oh, you know what I mean." Well, occasionally I hear laughter in the background, but I try to rise above it. And then, of course, it's very often not our minds, but our bodies that double-cross us. For example, there comes a time for many of us women of a certain age when it's no longer possible to reach back far enough to hook and unhook one's own bra. So, unless you're up to running out into the hall in your condo, or going next door to find an obliging neighbor, it becomes necessary to switch to a bra that fastens in front. That's very often seen as an admission that time is marching on. Well, of course, if one chooses to take a page from the 60s, that would be the decade, not my age. You could go braless. Not a pretty picture, so let's not go there. Speaking of which, and I can't think of any genteel way of saying this, I've yet to find a sophisticated and not awkward way of calling for assistance when that certain day comes. And it may very well come for you as well as for me. The day when, in a bathroom, either public or private, a woman whose knees and thigh muscles may have seen better days finds to her horror that there's nothing substantial close at hand to grab onto in order to haul oneself upright from a sitting position. Try as I might, it's hard to imagine Audrey Hepburn, had she lived as long as I have, calling out, "Would someone mind coming in here to lend me a hand? Last stall on the right." On the other hand, if anybody could finally cope with that awkward stage, Audrey Hepburn would probably be the one. Or maybe, like the millions of us who equate elegance with the performers on Dancing with the Stars, it could be Jane Seymour at the age of 56. Now that is a woman heading gracefully into a certain age. But I know it sure ain't me. For definitely not the opera, I'm Gene Freeman.
Thanks, Gene. It's a relief to know that despite our differences, humans can unite over one thing. Our awkwardness we never outgrow. That's it. That's all for this week, Podsters. As always, DNTO will be back on your radio next Saturday. We're on at 1 p.m. and 1:30 in Newfoundland on CBC Radio 1.
If you're not in Canuck land, visit cbc.ca/DNTO to find out how you can hear us in your neighborhood. And we'll be back in podcast form in 7 days. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us, don't be all awkward and shy about it. Drop us a line at dnto@cbc.ca or call our toll-free hotline, 1-866-630-3686. And finally, I would like to introduce you to the people who make DNTO with me. Come on up, guys, gals. Say your names. Don't be shy. Come on, peeps. Okay, well, they're just standing around awkwardly shuffling and staring at their shoes. So I'll tell you who they are. Anna Lazowski, Josh Schmidt, Doug Holmes, Nick Purton, and Sarah Tate. Iris Uday is our executive producer. I'm Sukhyun Lee, and thank you so much for downloading us. Have an awesome week.
Hi, I'm Jesse Brown. I'm the host of Search Engine, a new CBC radio show that is all about how the internet is changing politics and culture. It's not a gadget show. We don't really care much about technology so much as we care about the effect that technology is having on the world that we live in. All of the surprising and significant and funny stories that we bring you on Search Engine are about things that are happening right now. In the short time that we've been on the air, we've already become the CBC's most popular news podcast in the States. So come find out why. Subscribe to our podcast on CBC's podcasting page or through iTunes.